Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. The coronavirus crisis has prompted a number of charitable publishing initiatives. One of them is an anthology of short fiction featuring 14 crime writers called Afraid of the Light. Proceeds from the book go to the Samaritans. Well, writer and moving spirit behind the project is Joe Furness, who's author of All the Little Children, an Amazon charts bestseller, and the forthcoming suspense novel The Last to Know. How did the idea for this anthology come about?
Well, it started just before Christmas, actually. I went for lunch with a bunch of writers. We're mainly crime and suspense writers, sort of back in those days where you could just freely go to a restaurant. And one of us had the idea. I think it was Victoria Selman, who also writes crime fiction. She said, oh, you know, wouldn't it be great if we all wrote a short story and we put them together in an anthology? And we all agreed and went away without any particular deadline in mind. And then, of course, you know, go forward only just a few weeks and this COVID-19 situation, you know, we realised how serious it was going to get. And we realised that we had actually quite a good opportunity to use these stories that we'd written to do in our own small way something quite useful. So we sort of behind the scenes, we got them together as quickly as we could. And we have put this anthology together incredibly fast in terms of getting it ready for publication and put it out with all the profits going to the Samaritans, which is an organisation, you know, who helps people who are really on the front line of helping people in a crisis. And we realise that that is something that's going to be really necessary in the coming weeks and months.
Where did the title Afraid of the Light come from? It seems to be the opposite of what people are afraid of.
Yeah, well, it's actually it's a quote from Plato who says that we can forget. I'm going to slightly misquote it now because I don't have it in front of me. Apologies to Plato. He says that we can forgive a child who is afraid of the dark, but it's a real shame when a man is afraid of the light. And it was just a quote that we all we got talking about and we all seemed to connect with it in some ways. And we decided it was a sort of a loose theme for the anthology and it became the title as well.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about the theme. I mean, were you looking for something that was a thread that you wanted to follow through?
Not really. I mean, obviously, as I explained, the way that the anthology came about, we're quite a kind of ragtag bunch of writers. We all fall under the umbrella of crime and suspense writers, but our own style is very, very different one from another. So we kind of went away just to write a story that would appeal to us. And I think what it's resulted in is a very eclectic bunch of stories. There's 14 authors, 14 stories. And they're really different one from another. Some are very, very dark, quite creepy. Some are more emotional. A couple of them are really very funny. And I think they just reflect all of us as writers. But there is a theme that sort of runs through them because I think there's always a theme that runs through crime and suspense fiction. And I think that's issues to do with mental health, which of course is also the connection with the Samaritans. And ideas also of sort of redemption and hope and things like that. And I think actually, even though all of these stories get quite dark at various points, they all tend to be quite hopeful in their resolution.
The foreword is by Alex North, who, of course, very well-known crime writer, says that crime fiction is especially suited to making sense of difficult times and common anxieties. Do you think that the stories in this book provide escapism for the people need right now? I mean, I guess having a resolution at the end of a story is something we all crave at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what draws people to crime fiction at any time. It's funny, I so often read comments from readers who sort of say, oh, you know, isn't it terrible? But I really enjoy crime fiction, almost like it's a guilty pleasure. And I think actually that's what people, what you've just said is why people go to it. I think particularly actually for women, I think very often crime fiction offers a kind of justice that we don't always get in the real world. You know, if there's a story about a woman, I don't know, I'm just making up, but a woman who's being stalked, for example, in crime, she, you know, she can get justice in a way that she maybe doesn't get in the real world. So I think that's quite satisfying for readers. But yes, I think at this time in particular, we've had a lot of feedback from readers who've said that they quite enjoy, first of all, the escapism that you mentioned, but also in these times where people's sort of attention span has really reduced, they've actually really connected with shorter stories. We had a word limit of about 3,000, which is like 10 pages in a book. And I think a lot of people are finding that quite satisfying, just to read stories that are resolved in that short attention span that they have at the moment.
Victoria Selman mentioned that crime fiction is as much about the psychology of the victims and perpetrators as the crime itself, which means mental health charities are always close to our hearts. How important is psychology, both of the readers and the characters, when writing engaging crime fiction?
Oh, I think it's vital. I think it's the tool of our trade. And as I said before, I think that's what's up for us made the connection. We didn't really have any hesitation when we were talking about the proceeds of this going to a charity. We didn't really have any hesitation. We all sort of said, well, I think it's going to be a mental health charity. And I think actually Alex North put it really beautifully in the foreword for this, where he said the stories address the concerns and fears that we all feel. Isolation, loneliness, guilt, grief, you know, all of those issues, that's what we're all drawing on. And I think good crime fiction, you know, good suspense, digs really deeply into that issue of psychology. And as Victoria said, it says most of these stories, they're not really about the crime, they're about the causes of the crime. I sound like Tony Blenner, but it's about digging into why these things are happening, and you know, on all levels. That obviously the perpetrator, we're quite fascinated. Victoria writes about serial killers, so she's quite fascinated by the psychology of her perpetrator, but also, you know, the psychology of the victims. There's another story in the collection actually by a writer called Claire Empson, which is kind of about a stalker. But what is so beautiful about her story is it's really about the psychology of this middle-aged woman and how her own sort of insecurity left her vulnerable. And I think that story is really successful one. And it's also in crime fiction, it's about the psychology of the, you know, the detectives. I mean, we're all fascinated by these long-running detectives and what drives a particular person to want to, you know, sometimes put their own life at risk in order to resolve crimes. So I think the psychology is that it's the bedrock of crime fiction.
I mean, quite often in crime fiction, we see the detective as a very flawed human being. Quite often they're kind of hard-drinking, sort of middle-aged white men. And it's nice to see that this kind of gets away from that. And we're often looking at them, as you say, what kind of person wants to put their life at risk to solve a crime? They are often quite damaged, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you're writing characters, you're always looking for conflict, you know, sort of external conflict. In crime and suspense stories, it's quite easy to provide that external conflict because, of course, you know, they're trying to catch a killer. But you're also looking for a good character to have an internal conflict. And actually, you mentioned how a lot of detectives are sort of white males. And I tried to sort of counter that a little bit in my next novel. She's not a detective, she's a police officer, but she's a sort of middle-aged woman. She's sort of going through the menopause. She's sort of approaching the end of her career and is quite unsatisfied because her career is coming to an end rather abruptly, and she cares for her elderly father. And I tried to sort of dig into a slightly different area of internal conflict from the sort of the, you know, the hard drinking man who can't resist the pub.
You mentioned our attention spans, and I'm one of those people who just is not able to concentrate during this crisis. It's very difficult to read anything that is over around sort of 3,000 words, as you say. How have you found that that's affected your writing, though? Are you able to concentrate during this time?
I have to be honest, I'm finding it really hard. I mean, like many people, I have kids at home, we're homeschooling. A couple of weeks ago, I was okay because I got into a new little routine where I got up quite early. I was getting up at 6 o'clock and I would write for sort of 2 hours. And I actually found that I was really productive. And I thought to myself, wow, maybe I've hit on a new routine that I can just continue with, because I seem to get as much done in those 2 hours as I sometimes do in many more hours. But I've sort of hit a bit of a glitch now, because I've reached that stage in a story where I have to do what I call kind of deep thought. I've got to the halfway point in a novel and I need to now work out on that sort of big plot level, kind of what happens over the next kind of 15 to 20,000 words. And I just don't have the headspace to work it out. You know, I have a word target for each day and I can sit and work in those small chunks, a bit like you said with the reading, you know, I can do small chunks of writing. But having to sit and sort of in my head kind of have that expansive view over the next 20,000 words, I can't get it. So I've kind of dried up a little bit at the moment.
It's difficult, isn't it? But in fact, you have got a new book coming out, haven't you?
Yes, so my next novel comes out in August. It's called The Last to Know. It's a psychological suspense. It's probably my most crimey novel so far because I do have, as I mentioned before, I have one of my main characters is a police officer. And yeah, I'm excited to put it out there. The in some ways it resembles my own life, although the character is very, very different from me because it's about a woman who moves back to the UK from overseas and she moves to her husband's village where she's never actually been before. And when she gets there, she discovers that both him and his family are kind of pariahs from the local community. And the idea came to me because I did the same thing 2 years ago. I moved back after living overseas for almost 17 years. Happily for me, I moved back to a very nice village and everyone was very kind to me. But it gave me the idea of what if you did that huge move and it was the opposite? You just landed in a place where you were really not welcome. What would that be like? And the story sort of came from there. So it's a lot about home and your relationship with home. And the two female narrators in it have a very different relationship with the concept of home.
Finally, tell us about your story in Afraid of the Light.
Ah, well, my story, it's quite a strange one, and it's quite a strange one for me. It's about a woman. It's set sort of very slightly in the future in London, and I wanted to signal straight away that we were a little bit in the future, and I had in mind the first line of George Orwell's 1984, where he talks about the clocks were striking 13. I love the way that that just so quickly signals where we are. And so I tried to do something similar. And I was thinking, OK, if we're a little bit in the future, maybe London is flooded, you know, because of the rising seas. So the story starts with a woman sitting in a cafe, watching the gondolas kind of glide down the street towards Hammersmith. And we discover that she's lost her job to a kind of an editing robot because she's a journalist. And then she quite soon afterwards loses her husband to a different type of robot. And so, like I said, it's quite a sort of a strange story, but it's a little bit, I suppose, about how humans use technology. I wouldn't say the story is about being afraid of technology, it's but more about afraid of how humans misuse technology.
And couldn't be more pertinent, really, at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. There was another idea that came through in it because all the way through, the main character is looking at something called the feed, which is kind of a constant updated scroll of not just facts, but also it's kind of gone one step further where it reports health and moods and emotions. And she basically can't lie anymore. Nobody can really tell lies because the feed just reveals what you really think. And that idea really came directly from this COVID situation because back at the beginning of it, if you remember, I think there was a case, I think it was in Korea, if I remember correctly, whereby the tracking app, the contact tracing tracking app revealed that some man was having an affair because he wasn't where he should have been. And it gave me the idea that this technology could mean that it's increasingly difficult to lie to each other. And that sort of, you know, fed into the story as well.
Yeah, well, all of the 14 stories, I feel, just really not only diverting for today, but also very relevant. Jo, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Georgina. It's lovely to speak to you.
Jo Furness, one of the 14 authors who've contributed to the anthology of short crime fiction, Afraid of the Light. It's available on ebook via Amazon now, and all proceeds go to support the Samaritans. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hall and Charlie Filmer-Court. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, MixCloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.